This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
Jay Buhner just punched me in the kidney.
On Seattle Sports.
Are we going to excuse you on the internet?
That really worked that way, Sherm. This is a show that has my name on it.
It kind of does, though.
Brought to you by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Hello!
Well, if you want to be a run prevention team, Brock, you got to prevent runs. And unfortunately, the Mariners didn't do enough of that yesterday. You gotta make plays. Make plays in the field. You can't give them extra outs. You've got to close the door when the door is slightly ajar. And unfortunately, that was not the way yesterday went.
No. But what did go well is your haircut. Gosh, you look handsome this morning.
Thank you. That's nice.
Yeah, every time you get a haircut, it shaves years off of you. It really does.
It was a big hair removal day for me, as promised yesterday. Yeah, it was a big hair removal day.
Okay.
I spent the day removing myself of hair.
Yeah, getting ready for the beach?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Yep.
Yeah, you just
shoulders are clean.
You just knew the margin was very, very slim in the finale. That a team that hadn't lost two in a row was certainly not going to want to lose three in a row. That being the Atlanta Braves, and you know they can hit and they put the ball in play, and certainly against Emerson Hancock, that had to be a bit of a relief to them after the stuff they saw the first two nights. Put the ball in play, and you kind of booted around, unfortunately. And once that happened, and once you gave them extra outs, and once one big inning occurred, and, you know, you gave yourself chances. You had a lot of traffic.
Yeah.
You know, you obviously, Sale was dominant early, but you kind of nickeled and dimed and put people on base, and you just couldn't deliver the blow, and they didn't make the mistake that, unfortunately, old Mitchie made in right field.
Yeah, and so there you go. So you win two out of three. You kind of knew this was a possibility. This is why you went for the jugular, you know, the way you did in game two, to try to make sure you win that game. Is there anything, I guess I'll play the devil's advocate on that, and I was as supportive of it as anybody, and I still am. I think that's the way you do it. I'll ask you, Brock, as an athlete, is there, and I don't know if this even applies to baseball, but is there any part of you that thinks, well, if you go for it all and go for the jugular and win it in game two like that, is there a letdown at all that takes place in game three because you feel like you've sort of spent up all your energy the night before?
I don't think so. I think if anything, you know, we've talked about this with Emerson a little bit. Like, I got nothing to lose. I got somebody over my shoulder. He's sitting in that dugout. He's had two great rehab starts and Brian Wu. And, you know, I got to go out here and just cut it loose. You know, I've got Sebi Zavala, you know, there's, you know, a little bit. I think maybe that plays a little more of a role. Like, man, we're not firing all of our best bullets, right? And
yet he had two hits yesterday.
Yes, he did.
Of course.
Yes, he did. Just when you're ready.
Every time you think Sebi's about to walk himself right off this roster, he's like, hey, hold on a minute.
That's right.
I got three hits in me today. What's
That's
up?
That's right.
Yeah.
Mitch cannot. How many games of right field would you like to see Mitch Haniger played this
season?
Like
in a perfect world, none.
Yeah.
But that's not the way it's going to work. I mean, they have a DH, so if you want Mitch in the game, for the most part, he's going to play right field. I said this before he got, like, I don't think Mitch is a great right fielder anymore. I love the guy, and it pains me to say that, and I'm sure, you know,
Well, it's just protecting him.
I know.
Right?
It's not just that, It's not just that. I don't think he's a great outfielder. I think the speed is not what it once was.
Yep.
I don't know that his instincts were ever incredible in right field. I think that some of that, he always had a really good arm, and there were always a couple of big splash plays that you'd see, and I think there was a group kind of convinced that Mitch was a better right fielder than he actually was. And I feel bad saying that because it's not like he doesn't work at it. It's not like he's a, you know, he's awesome. Man, I love Mitch Haniger. And so
everybody does. And that's why you love his response.
It's
after
amazing
the game yesterday as well. Right?
Like, yeah, he's like, I bleeped it up.
Yep.
Absolutely. He said he hasn't been playing, you know, right field as well as he'd like to. Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Totally get it. And he's probably discovering, much like I did a week ago today, that as you get older, it's harder and harder to do the things you used to do athletically. And I'm sure that's a challenge for him. And by the way, he's obviously working at remaining young a lot harder than I am.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he's not like a plus outfielder at this stage in his career. Thankfully, you've got Julio, who's covering a lot of ground next to him.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we knew this was an issue. We knew that this was part of the problem. When Mitch hits, you can kind of say, all right, he's not going to get to everything in right field. But when he's on fire, he is on fire.
Yep.
On the other hand, when he's cold and he's a streaky hitter, that's if there's one thing we know about Mitch, there are ups and there are downs. Yep. And unfortunately, right now, he's sort of in one of those downs, and then you compound it with the error in right field and the fact that it leads specifically to four runs and you lose by three. That's a tough day.
Yeah. And it also, you know, what it shows you, and I was going to ask you this yesterday and passing the other day, is there anything Hancock can do over these final couple starts to keep himself here? And I just don't think there is.
No.
Because when you get 0-2, and he got to 0-2 on a few guys, there just isn't that kill, right? There isn't what Luis has. There isn't what Logan has. There isn't what Kirby has. There isn't what Bryce has. I mean, all there isn't what Wu has. You know, I think Wu has that kind of stuffy stuff that when you get these guys in 0-2 counts and 1-2 counts, you got to finish them.
Yeah, I mean, Wu has the arm angle that's similar to Luis Castillo. We went through those arm angles and stuff with Cal Raleigh yesterday when he joined us. And he was talking about, he called Luis, what, kind of a sidewinder almost. It's not like he's a full submarine sidearm guy, but it's so three-quarter, and it gets such a funky, you know, rise effect to it. And Brian Wu's got that, too, with his fastball. We've kind of forgotten because we haven't seen him pitch in so long, but he also has that with the fastball, and he's got a devastating slider. And we don't know yet what he's developed to accompany it, but we know that those two pitches put people away. And so, yeah, I don't think there was anything that he could do to remain in this lineup, short of hoping that the next rehab start doesn't go the way he wants it to.
Titus and I had a funny little conversation yesterday, by the way, driving to baseball practice. I was chatting with a friend of mine whose two boys are really good baseball players. One's in college. One's going to junior college with the hopes of either college or getting drafted. So really all like baseball family all in. And I was driving with Titus down to practice last night. And I said, you know what would be so fun? And this is just a weirdo, left-handed, middle child, all that goofy stuff that I am. You know what would be so fun is if we parked our car and you walked into practice and out walked Logan, out walked Castillo, out walked Bryce Miller, out walked George at 14. Like it the exact same. Wouldn't it be just so
to see what they were at that moment?
To see what they were at 14 years old, right? To see if you knew right then and there with Luis Castillo. Titus, like, Luis probably throwing 90. I'm like, I don't know, man. At 14 in the Dominican, you know, he's probably 125 pounds. So, but did he have that release then? You know, was that just a God-given natural? That's just my slot.
Probably. Yeah.
Probably.
He's probably always had natural movement on whether he was throwing 80 or 90. The natural movement was always probably so ridiculous.
I said, Logan was probably pretty goofy. I'm like, yeah, probably. Yeah.
Probably took probably him a while all, to grow into that.
Yeah. Probably all arms grow into and
that.
Legs.
And you know what? So was Kirby probably at that age would be my guess. Uh-huh. Interesting. So, yep. I was spending a couple of minutes just kind of looking at the stand. Have you looked much at the standings this year? Kind of where
I study them every
at?
Night.
Do you?
And I actually do. I take a look at those. I mean, not every night, but I take a pretty good look at those.
Yeah. I look maybe once or twice a week. I wouldn't say I'm every night, but once a week I like to just sort of get a, you know, remind myself who's where.
Did
Man,
you
is everything
up,
topsy-turvy, huh?
Did you, growing up, have a newspaper?
Of course, and Boston Globe every day.
Look at the box scores.
Page four,
the
scoreboard, yes, every day. Yes, I looked at the page four, which was all of the scores, of course.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Every single morning, yes. Yep. That was a part of my morning routine.
It's Coma News Tribune. That's exactly what we would do in our house as well. So you kind of become a little creature habit of that during baseball.
Things a little topsy-turvy all of a sudden, and certainly in the American League, just kind of looking through it.
Yep.
Some of these teams are, you know, as expected. The fact that the Orioles are on top of the AL East is what we expected this year, but still, when you see Baltimore and their low payroll compared to the Yankees, compared to obviously the Red Sox, but the Red Sox are supposed to be terrible this year, and they're five games above 500.
Yep.
The Blue Jays and Rays are supposed to be great. They're both under 500 so far this year. In the Central, all right, we knew Cleveland was probably the class of that division, but that's supposed to be the worst division, like, in baseball. They have one sub-500 team. That's the White Sox, who are, the worst team in history. But all these other teams, the Royals, doormats, they're 19-13, pitching unbelievably well, better than you. The Tigers, doormats for a decade, 18-13. They're playing really good baseball.
You bring Benetti over and everything changes.
The Twins are still hanging on right there in that division. We'll see how all that shakes out over the course of longer than a month. But all of a sudden, the Central looks a whole lot better than it's supposed to. And then you go to the West, and the Mariners still lead by a game. Texas lost yesterday, but you know, okay, they're both there, a little above 500. The A's, for all of the talk, are 15-17. And if they have a lead in the ninth inning, say goodnight. Their closer might be the best in baseball. Guys, have you seen this guy pitch?
Eckersley?
He's better. This guy's unbelievable. What's his name? Mason Miller? Oh my gosh! Do not take a do not get down early to the A's.
Yeah, Mason Miller.
They're just two games below 500. The Angels are finally becoming the Angels again, and then the Astros are on pace, Brock, to lose 109 games. What a strange start to this season. Is it all going to shake out that way? Probably not. But you give a team like the Royals or the Tigers a little bit of hope at the beginning of the year. You never know where things like that might go. Maybe they arrive a little bit before expected. Okay, coming up, we're going to give you guys everything you need to know. Plus, Brock, I mentioned this earlier, Justin's wearing his Sonics jacket. And for good reason today, because Sonics news is on the way. It's next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
You knew it was going to be tough to sweep a really good team like the Atlanta Braves. The Mariners gave it a go, but if you're going to accomplish something like that, you better play clean, and they weren't able to do that yesterday.
Yeah, when you give, you know, we say here all the time around here, 27 outs, no more. We gave more than 27 outs today, and that was ultimately decided the game in that one inning. They were able to put big two-out hits together. You know, we had two outs, man on second, base hit, big triple off the wall, and that was the game, you know, in that inning. So, again, you got to play clean to beat good teams, and, you know, we weren't able to overcome that with enough offense today.
Bullpen was great. Bullpen, once again, just kind of gave you life and gave you opportunities. And gosh, how many times that one inning, Salk, Dylan Moore had three straight balls, like within 3 inches. I mean, honest to goodness, a line drive right over his head, a line drive to his right, Emerson throw back to him on the air by Emerson. Like, just
it just kind of happens like that sometimes,
right? If Mitch is one step faster, right, gets to that wall instead of having to jump into the wall, just gets to that wall one step faster. He can make that catch, right? The obviously off of his thumb.
Yeah, look, that matters. All of that stuff does. On the other hand, you know, it does begin and end with starting pitching for this team. And while Hancock wasn't bad, certainly not as bad as the numbers would have appeared, he wasn't great either.
He wasn't as sharp. And I think the thing that stood out for me with Emerson and his time in the big leagues is that when he pitches well, he is in control of the count. He gets ahead in the count. He's on the attack. And today it wasn't quite as sharp. Early in counts, you know, we saw a couple walks early, was able to work through it there in the first inning. But, you know, I think he's learning. He's a young pitcher. Days like today, you do learn. You say all that. And again, just too many free bases today ultimately is what got us.
It did. And so, you mentioned the accountability from Mitch Haniger, which was great. The day off today and then a trip back to Texas. So this time they're going to see the Astros, who are floundering. Their pitching is a mess. Their big first baseman, Abreu, they sent down to the minors to fix himself. They're 10-20 on the season, on pace to lose 109 games. I don't think anybody thinks that's an 109 loss roster. So kind of the question is, when do they snap out of it? And can you keep beating them before they do? We'll give it a go starting tomorrow for 3 in Houston.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
This is a non-story, but it's worth talking about because of that. The Mariners announced yesterday the addition of Microsoft president co-chair Brad Smith and his family to their ownership group. As I said, most likely a non-story unless you're like directly related to him or something. Mm-hmm. My understanding is he's buying in for a small minority share. It will not affect much of anything. This is not an infusion of cash. This is not a precursor to a sale or a big change. This is just a small addition to the group and likely done via an internal transfer, which essentially means a couple of the smaller minority owners are, you know, selling a few shares of their stock to him.
Yeah. I appreciated our conversations even during the break right there. When you look at it, you're like, well, I mean, he's got good money. He's a half a billionaire, but it's not like he's a 10 billionaire.
Right.
You know, when you talk about these owners, man, going back to the NBA, which I know you're going to talk about too, like the whales, right? How many times we talk about Steve Ballmer just being a whale, like just those that are so, so different in their level of, in their level of resources. Yeah. And wealth. And you know, that isn't the situation, but somebody that's ingrained in the community, both husband and wife, Salk, somebody that's, you know, got some great corporate partnerships and work themselves and been at Microsoft forever.
Yep.
Never a bad deal.
And you never know exactly what these, you know, what these Forbes net worth valuations really are. His was somewhere between 250 and 400. The guy I'm about to talk about is at $6.3 billion.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
That would be David Bonderman, who is the lead owner of the Seattle Kraken. I think we're going to be hearing his name again sooner rather than later. NBA media rights deal is gaining steam, so that should get done soon. It's looking now like the NBA is going to be on NBC. Back on NBC, Brock, what? So you can sit. Yes.
With Ahmad Rashad.
Yep. NBA on NBC plus ESPN and Amazon, which would actually leave TNT out. We'll see where that goes. But we've heard this for ages now. Once this deal gets signed, that's when we will start to hear about expansion. And by all accounts, it's going to be Seattle and Vegas. That's not a report, but that's certainly what we've heard from any number of people that are in the know. Seattle will be one of the teams. And awesome. I'd sure be willing to bet some money, not $6.3 billion, because I don't have it.
You don't have it.
But David Bonderman does.
You don't even have a mortgage. You don't even have a house. You don't even have kids. Yeah. You've already lost it all.
Yep, that's me. David Bonderman, already vetted by the league. Remember, he's a minority owner with the Celtics. Andy Jassy, who's one of his co-owners, head of Amazon, of course. Jassy is also, well, Amazon's now going to be involved in the NBA as well. So it's sure they own the building. This thing's going down.
Yeah. Yep.
There it is. A little round ball rock for you this morning.
As you read page 4 of the Boston.
Every day, page 4 of the sports page. All right, that's everything you need to know.
Clipper Jones? What was Clipper? Was it Clipper?
What are you talking about?
The analyst for NBC basketball.
Clipper. Mike Fratello?
No, he was a czar. He's a czar.
The czar.
Yes. And I used to love when Fratello would stand there with Bill Walton or any other 7-footer. Oh my gosh, those were the days.
The czar with Marv Albert. The czar.
Yes.
Clipper. I don't remember that. I don't know who you're talking about.
I'll look it up. I'll figure it out.
That is not something that
I
remember.
I'll figure it out.
You'll have to.
Was Bonderman in our building? It was Bruckheimer and Bonderman, right?
Yep. They both came in here. Yep. That's exactly right. Yep. I know what you're thinking about. Anyway, how do you think that's going to be received? We were talking about it earlier. Like, it's been 15 years, Brock. This was like the first conversation you and I had when we first got here, right? Because it was right after the team had left. And there was so much raw anger at the time. I want to dig into this a little bit more deeply later, because the NBA's changed a lot in 15 years. And a lot of people who swore that league off forever are likely going to come back, which I have no problems with whatsoever. But what are you going to find when you get there? I am curious about sort of just the way the song. Everyone's going to be excited, as they should be. We need another team here. That's the way Seattle should be. The Sonics belong back in Seattle. But I'm also curious, once that initial, okay, we got our team back thing happens, then what?
Yeah, I'll tell you, man, the one thing, and it's not my words, it's the actions of these guys. I mean, this is a basketball community. There's a reason that Jamal makes his home here. Det makes his home here. Sean makes his home here. GP's here. Like, there's a reason these guys are here, because it is a basketball, man, this community loves its basketball and loved its Sonics, man, and would rock that joint. And here's one thing that has to happen. It has to be the Sonics. It has to be the Supersonics. It has to be all, you know, that history.
Can't have a
taken from the basement there in Oklahoma City. You keep your ridiculous thunder, and we will take all of this back, and we will reignite it right back here in this market.
All right, great stuff. Let's come right back. How do you fix the Mariner offense? It's May 2nd. So what do you do? I don't mean go back in time and make changes in the way you built the roster. They are not hitting a month into this season. What can realistically be done to change that? It's next on Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk.
Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
30 minutes from now, Brock, we're going to play a little Answer the Question Jerk. We haven't done that in a while, and we've got a bunch of questions came in via the X platform last night. I know it's life-giving for you, and Justin was excited about it as well. So if you guys have more questions, you can text him in.
It doesn't fill your left tank?
Yeah, it does. Actually, I enjoy it. I always have. Always, good. Probably always will. 866-979-3776, Mac and Jack's text line. If you want to send in a question, any question on any subject, we'll answer them coming up here in 30 minutes. Brock, what do? You're Scott Servais, Jerry DePoto, Justin Hollander. Your team is obviously not performing offensively the way you want it to through the first month of the season. Option A, you wait, you're patient, and that's probably the one they're going to choose, especially when you hear about my options B, C, D, and E, because none of them are particularly appealing. But that's where you're at right now. 1 month in, the trade market's not really open. There's no, like, you know, guy you're just going to go out and get to play a specific position right now. So you're in wait and see mode. Is there anything you can do internally to try to change things? I started thinking about it yesterday.
It's funny, I did too, man. I had an extended, extended tough time.
Okay.
Yes. And looking through standings, looking through stats, looking through the Mariners minor league. I don't know what it was about that game, but it just kind of invoked. I wasn't angry. I wasn't, you know, I was. Right. I felt bad for Mitch.
What can you do?
Yeah. I just kind of thinking like, man, are there some? And
I've got a name. Now's the time. You're a month in. It's not a week in. You know, it's not, nothing's for sure yet, but you're a month into the season. Mm-hmm. And I also had some extra time yesterday. I was waiting for Cecily outside her, one of her various activities, rock climbing. I was sitting in my car with the windows down, just kind of doing some of the same stuff. So here are some possibilities. You can drop Julio in the order, right? You did it last year. It worked, right? At least for a little while. Maybe it relaxed him. Would I want to do this? Probably not. I don't feel that great about it. I would feel better about this move if he wasn't finding ways to help by still, you know, hitting a little bit in terms of average. He had a couple more hits yesterday, and his speed is still a huge value, and I do still want him coming up as often as possible. Mm-hmm. But it did work last year, maybe because it relaxed him or something. I don't know. It's an option, but I don't think it's one I would try yet. You?
Yeah, I don't love him hitting leadoff. Right. I would much prefer somebody just hitting in front of him. Mm-hmm. You know, when JP, you know, kind of your formula, back to your formula. And obviously that's been messed
and I think
up.
They're
with
doing
the,
that, right, with against righties. When Rojas is in there, he'll hit leadoff. I don't know whether there's another likely candidate right now. So I think Julio's sort of the best of all possibilities. Mm-hmm. But yeah, your point's well taken. I don't generally love him in that spot either. But I'm not dropping him down to 7, 8, 9.
No, I'm not going to do it.
There's no need for it.
Nope.
So that one is out. More regular playing time for Luke Raley, right? He thrived last season once he got more regular playing time. I don't know how much more there is without playing him against lefties too, right? I mean, maybe some at first base and try to give him a little bit more run there against especially right-handed pitching, I guess. But I don't know whether that's the solution. But
you feel like he's earned that opportunity?
Not based on what he's done so far this year, but I guess the argument would be he hasn't had enough regular playing time to get himself on track.
Right.
Maybe that's the
thing
that unlocks
him. And I know that spring should not matter, and I know that spring's its own animal, but you're making an impression. Like, did he come in here and just hit some home runs and had some pop? And right? I mean, does he hit a home run this year?
I don't think so. Maybe one, but that's not been his game so far for a guy that really has a lot of power. So there's an option that, again, I don't know that I'm wild about that plan, but okay. Mm-hmm. Let Garver catch a little. You and I talked about this maybe a week ago, and of course Zavala would have two hits yesterday. Why wouldn't he? Mm-hmm. And three hits a couple of starts before that. But, you know, if you're looking, this would be more about Garver and less about Zavala. It would be, hey, maybe just getting him in the gear, in the game, calling pitches, etc. Maybe it just kind of gets him away from thinking about his batting struggles all the time. Mm-hmm. We talked a lot about the relief on his face when he hit that home run the other night. And I don't blame him for being excited. I don't blame him for being relieved. I'm sure it makes perfect sense. This is a mental game. And he talked about it afterwards, feeling like, you know, he's searching for it a little bit. Okay, I get it. Totally fine. You're in a new team and it's not going the way you want it to right off the bat. But what if you could just kind of take some of that off his plate and be like, hey man, we just want you to focus on catching for a couple of days and maybe just go out and hit and don't think about it so much. Maybe it helps him just get away from looking up at that batting average every day.
Yep. I mean, he seems to be a pretty cerebral guy, you know, doesn't like our questions at times, especially your weird ones.
Stop.
Which I get.
Why you got to go there? That's unnecessary.
But he seems to be a pretty cerebral guy. Mm-hmm. And I would think that, have an opportunity to do what Cal does in catching this staff would be energizing, right? To put that game plan together and take a little bit off of, okay, you know, every 45 minutes, I'm going to go up here and I'm going to hit and I'm going to study all, like, just to, I don't know, just to relax and react rather than just be in, like, okay, I got to produce mode in these four at bats. When I get my four shots a game, and contribute in some other ways, right?
That is a strange question.
Thank you, Mitch. Appreciate that.
Yes.
So that's another one that's going to be on the list. Maybe finding a way to help get him going by almost doing the opposite of the norm, but getting him to catch maybe once or twice to think about the game a little bit differently. Again, you're kind of, there's only so many options without really going to the outside, which isn't that available for you.
Justin, I don't multitask well, so I'm trying to be totally present and engaged.
It's nice. Mm-hmm.
Can you see if Garver caught many games last year at all for Texas?
Sure.
Just see, I'm curious what that number was and if it's zero.
Not zero. He caught some games for them last year.
Okay. Right.
The last one is you can look internally for a bat that would make a difference. And when you look up and down their minor league system, there's not a tremendous amount that's really major league ready. But let's go back to the one guy that probably is. And we talked a lot about him in spring training. He was a threat, not to make the team, but to be called up sooner rather than later.
Yep.
And I don't know if you happened to do this yesterday as well,
yes,
but I went and looked at his numbers.
Wow.
You did?
Yes.
That is so funny.
That is crazy.
Tyler Locklear is clubbing the ball in Double A. He is killing it. For those who don't remember the name, he's a first baseman. They were super high on him last year and thought he might even be major league ready last year. Then he got hurt, missed a tremendous amount of time, and that kind of evaporated as a possibility. He's not like a big time draft pick. He's not like
a
huge name, but he's kind of been a steady hitter. And he's climbed pretty quickly in their organization. They really like him and think that he can hit at the major league level. He's got an over 900 OPS.
Correct.
He's killing the ball so far this year. And for all the talk in spring about Ty France's offseason, the results have not been there yet. He's not had a very good start to the year.
Mm-hmm.
Here's the thing. It's not a move you make lightly. He is, Tyler Locklear, plays two positions, first base and DH.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So if you're bringing him up and you want him to have some regular playing time, you are taking away playing time from either Ty France or from Mitch Garver significantly, right? And maybe even from Mitch Haniger as well. So I spent a little time kind of digging into that. Okay, so do you think about saying enough with Ty France? Are you going to release Ty France and be done? Well, based on the results, you'd say, sure, this is now going on 2 years almost where Ty's really not hit the ball. Did you also go, Brock, just since you and I were having like apparently the same day yesterday, any chance you went to Ty France's Baseball Savant page?
Oh.
Is that one step beyond where you went yesterday?
I'm an analytics guy, but that's one step too far.
Well, it's interesting. Here's why I think it is actually interesting and worthwhile. I'm not like a huge, I don't do this a ton.
Yep.
But Ty France's results so far don't mirror what's under the hood. And when those two things mirror each other, you know that something's going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
He has not been a good hitter so far. Batting run value, he's 44th percentile below average. So he's not been a great hitter to start the year. But when you look at some of the expected stuff,
mm-hmm.
average exit velocity, 77th percentile. The expected WOBA, 77th. Expected batting average, 88th.
Mm.
Expected slugging, 83rd.
And by the way, the higher the number's good here.
Right.
It's
percentile. Exactly.
It's not like rankings in the league.
Percentile in the league, right? I said hard hit percentage, 85%. Sweet spot percentage, 94th percentile.
Wow.
Chase percentage, 76th, I think that says, 76th percentile. So you're looking at, you know, whiff percentage is down, right? That's still not great. K percentage isn't great. Walk percentage isn't where you want it to be. And please, whatever you do, don't look at the fielding arm strength or sprint speed, because they're all bottom 5 percentile in the league right now. Ty France, remember we were talking about him playing third? There's a question right now about him even playing first. Seriously, those numbers are terrible. But when all of those expected batting average, expected hitting types of things don't match up necessarily with the results, there is a luck factor that could be going on.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether you're giving up on Ty France just yet and calling up Tyler Locklear. You also just spent 2 years, $24 million on Mitch Garver, and you're kind of waiting for him to get going. You're going to quit on Garver after 100 at-bats?
No.
That doesn't seem quite right either. So, I Tyler Locklear is going to be out there, and he may be an option in the first half of this year. And certainly if something were to happen to anybody on the sort of DH first base world, he's the guy I think that you'd be looking to. Yeah. But are you going to trust a rookie coming up from double A to do more than a Ty France, who has actually had pretty good expected numbers, even though the results haven't been there? Yeah. Are you going to trust a rookie coming up from double A more than Mitch Garver, who was a World Series hero just a few months ago and, you know, has a track record of a lot more success than what you've seen? Probably not. Mm-hmm. So for in terms of internal options right now, unfortunately, I don't think there's a lot you can do. You've tried simplifying it, right? Taking away the iPads and some of that. And maybe there's more of that you can do to try to continue to just let the guys go out and hit. Polanco's not really hitting. You got to be patient. That's what you invested in. Garver's not hitting. You got to be patient. That's what you invested in. Haniger's always been streaky. Kenzone's not back yet. JP's not back yet. The trade market's not there yet. I don't.
So just Julio's keep pitching. Just keep pitching great, and you know a lot of this will work itself out. It just kind of always does, especially through this month of May, right? You give it until the end of May. You give it to Memorial Day before you really do make that adjustment. Jerry kind of talked to us and talked through this over the last couple years, Salk, right? That first until Memorial Day, that's a real observation and analyzing time of what our guys doing. And oh, by the way, Garver, 27 games a catcher last year.
Yep.
55 as a DH, 27 as a catcher. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and obviously all of his years in Minnesota.
And they don't want him to catch much because of the wear and tear on the body, and he's got injury concerns. And I still wonder a little bit if the back is a part of it for him this year, and if that's not why, you know, if that's part of the reason he's not started off strong. So I'm not suggesting he become the backup catcher.
Correct.
But give him a game or two.
Yeah.
Maybe it just sort of helps him spring. See the world differently.
I mean, remember in the spring we saw him, and he caught, I think, a game or two even in the spring to kind of see these guys and see their stuff. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you one thing. I every once in a while I get real upset with you.
Me?
I mean, I still do. And you get real upset with me, right? Every once in a while, like an old married couple, that doggone chart that you sent early this year, and it was in regards to the Rangers, by the way, and the age of some of their guys, and that eventually age catches up with you. Father time in this game of velo, and yes, there's a lot of spin, but my goodness, there is still a lot of velo. And when Chris Sale's pumping 96 at the top of the zone with his weird arm angles, you see, just like Luis, how hard it is to hit. And, you know, that kind of threshold in baseball that once you get to 31, 32, we saw a little bit, I think, with A. Eugenio. We've certainly seen it out of Abreu down there in Houston. Like, man, that bat speed just starts to diminish. It just does. And, you know, your two Mitches, I didn't realize the old Mitch Witch, they're both December birthdays. They're both 33, right? They're so you are going to, I think, be in observation mode over the next month or so just to see.
Yeah, you got
to
see what they have left. Absolutely. Yes. And Polanco, because a 23-year-old,
32? He's 30. So he will be 31 in July. But a 23-year-old like Locklear, he's not 19. Mm-hmm. He's not Cole Young. He's not a high school kid. He was an established guy out of college, had a great college career, and in his, you know, and made waves in the spring.
Yeah, I mean, no, what was the name? You're going to be watching for him. I don't think it's today. I don't think it's this week. But I think you're going to go another month here with Mitch and Garver and with Ty France. And at some point, if you're looking to upgrade this roster offensively, you're looking at first base. You're looking right now as a DH. You're looking in the corner outfield spots to see if there are places where you can get better. So keep your eyes peeled. We'll see what happens. For now, patience is a virtue. Patience is the shortcut. And they really need Julio to start being Julio, and that would help a lot.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
All right, we're going to spend a lot of time throughout training camp in this season talking about Ryan Grubb and the new Seahawks offense. Brock, other than him, what other assistant will have the biggest impact on this team?
It was an assistant that was held over. And there weren't a lot of them. Right? I don't even know if there was another one.
Just one?
Carl Scott. Carl Scott, secondary coach. Carl Scott was at Alabama, first of all, for a couple reasons. He fits the profile of a whole lot of the rest of the staff. Young and hungry and just willing, I think, with the not a college-like atmosphere, but there are a lot of college guys that are making the step up to the pro level now. It's going to be, there's going to be, I mean, there was always tremendous energy with Pete, right? When the Jay Glazers and everybody came around, it's like, man, this place is different. The culture here is different. The vibe is positive. The energy because of Pete and the juice factors off the charts. Well, it's going to continue in that way. Mm-hmm. And now it's going to be more youthful. And what I love about Carl Scott and why I think he was kept around Salk is I don't think they maximized his background, maximized his resume. Maximize what he did at Bama in a lot of their match coverage, in a lot of their pattern reading, a lot of the things that that is going to be asked of this secondary to take a step, you know, from a cerebral level, from an understanding level, from the information is in the formation level of really what we want to do here. So I'm kind of excited to see the holdover. I'm kind of excited. And even that phone call that he had with that young rookie
little,
DJ.
Little juice there,
oh,
huh?
Yes, he did. Oh, really? Okay, I kind of prescribe to the, I'd like to see it and not just hear it. So come, come out
say,
here.
I hear, I see better than I hear.
That's so good.
It is good.
Oh, that's so good. Just so, to see if you could find that at the end of this. That was the call with DJ James.
See better than I hear. All right. Appreciate you. Yes. All right, question number two. Speaking of those rookies, Brock, as they get ready to arrive here for mini camp, who can make the biggest impression during this stretch?
Mm-hmm. We know it's easiest for quarterbacks and receivers to do that. That's not what this draft class is full of. And even running backs, right? When we would watch Charbonnet look like the Terminator, when we watch K-9 early on in camp, just the explosion. So this is a little different. And it's way, way harder to evaluate and judge guys without pads on. And I'm projecting here, but I want the talk of the next 3 days to be Christian Haynes. I want the talk of him, everything that Jim Morris said about him. Man, is he a leader. Man, does he resonate. Man, does he just a rock right in the middle of your line. I want to see him just look a little different. I don't want sloppy, right? A little bit like Abe Lucas. Abe Lucas, that rookie camp song, I think he was
stood
the one.
Out.
Yes, he did. I think you had said to me, like, dude, this guy's like an athlete.
Forget
he's
about
enormous.
Charles Cross. We got to talk about this guy.
That's right. Yeah. This third rounder, right? Third rounders are people too, Salk. Okay.
Fourth rounder?
No, Abe was a third rounder, I believe.
I always think of him as a fourth rounder.
Well, maybe he is. Justin, you can check that too. I'm making Justin multitask like a madman.
Justin's busy.
Yeah. So I hope it's Christian Haynes. I'm projecting, but I want the talk the next 4 days to be that rock right in the middle of the O-line.
He was number 72 overall, third round. Sorry about that.
Yeah.
Question number three.
Dude, I don't get mad at you. When I do that to you, you're like, why do people always doubt me?
I wasn't doubting you. I was saying that in my mind, I always think he's a fourth rounder.
Why are you trying to correct me?
No, I was saying, I was doubting me.
Don't tease me, bro.
Jeez. Brock, question number three. Which college player could impact the sport in a way nobody else can or has?
Ooh, I like this one. This is my curiosity yesterday.
Is it Sam Heward?
No, it is not Sam Heward.
I hear Sam Heward's definitely going to Washington. Is that true?
No.
I read a report yesterday. It said Sam Heward's on his way to Washington.
Yeah, I saw it on the internet, so it's real.
Brock, it's on the internet.
Really bad take on Twitter. But I don't even know who that site was. But no, not committed there.
All right, just checking.
No, all the conversations you and I have, Salk, about youth sports, and you're starting to see it now with your girls, is they're participating in youth basketball and in golf in these different realms. And you know, we've had so many of these, like, just slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Just enjoy the journey. Don't become just a one-trick pony in fifth grade, right? Make it about the bigger picture. And you're going to chuckle at this. And I know exactly what you're going to say is, well, he can do that, and he can. He can do that because of his last name. He gets more benefit of the doubt than anybody else. But the way that Arch Manning has handled high school, the way that he's handled his first 2 years going into his second year here at Texas Salk is unique and different. He did not do the Elite 11 circuit. He did not do the 7-on-7 circuit.
He bailed on the Manning camp.
He did not do any of that. He was a three-sport athlete at a smaller school that his dad and uncles went to. And was fine playing at that lower level and didn't need all of that. He wasn't on Twitter. Mm-hmm. He wasn't posting every offer. He wasn't doing any of that. And then he goes to college, Salk, and he's got a heavy NIL deal. You don't know what it is. No, he never talks about it. And then after Quinn Ewers decides to come back to school, he doesn't leave. And he'll pay his dues, pay his time. In this day and age, to sit around and wait for 2 years before you're going to play quarterback?
I mean, if I'd watch Quentin Ewers play, I would absolutely stick around too. There's no way that guy's going to stay too much longer.
Yeah, maybe he's not. Maybe he doesn't stay healthy. I don't know. He's projected to be a top 10 pick, but he's learning He's growing. He's developing. It's okay that I'm not a finished product my senior year of high school. It's okay that I redshirted and I got room to grow in this journey, and I don't have to have it all right now. And I know that he has more benefit than anybody else.
He does.
He does.
It really does change things when your last name is Manning.
It makes the dynamic much harder. If it was Johnson and he had no family and no relative and no background, it would be harder.
A lot harder.
But there are other guys doing that too and paying their dues and just taking the long road and the long journey. And yeah, the fact that he didn't transfer and didn't leave resonates.
I think that part's good. I'll give him a lot of credit on that. And I love your point here in general. That's today's Blue 88. I do love the point in general, and I do hope that there's room for more of that in, you know, youth, high school, college sports, et cetera. And I think everything we know about allowing kids to play different sports and what they learn from it is so valuable. And yep. I we could spend all day on just some of the
ills. Will Cain, I jumped on
but
with
him.
But
it's a lot easier to do it.
It absolutely
when your
is.
Name is Archman.
It absolutely is. But I was jumping on, and Will Cain was talking about the bust rate of all these QBs and looking at the last few years. And certainly I tend to fall in the Tom Brady bucket, which is, man, you're just not developing. You're just not, you know, there's no off seasons. There's no, you know, back in the day, you're there in March and you're in meetings and you're working and you're developing. And there's Green Bay Packers had QB camp, right, with Hasselbeck and Brunel and these guys in March and in April and just working and working and growing your craft. And that's not around. But I also think as sped up as everything is through junior high and high school, and, you know, are you building that inner fortitude and grit, right? Are you building all of that? That also has to be a part of handling the failure that's going to come at Jaden Daniels. It's going to come at Caleb Williams. It's going to come at these guys, come at them in a hurry. This is a much aged, much more veteran crew, a bunch of grown men in this draft class. But, man, the journey is still really
arduous. You know
what
else is in this draft class, Brock?
What's that?
Dogs.
Yeah.
Dogs. You know you just got a dog, right?
Is that right? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. They got a dog.
Well, you know what they say. You know what they say, man. I see better than I hear now, so you're going to have to show me now.
You know I got it.
Good. It's a good reply.
So good.
Have you been following the adventures of this Florida State kid who's now with Buffalo? What's his name?
Keon Coleman? Yes.
Oh my gosh. He's awesome.
Very good.
So first he had the whole thing with the yellow jacket. And then yesterday, did you see the whole thing about how he went to the, he wanted to go to the pool? Oh my God. So funny. He's like, yeah, I went downstairs at the hotel when I was there on my 30 visit because I wanted to go to the pool, get a little workout in. And they didn't have a pool. They had a skating rink. And he's like, man, they want me to go play hockey. Like, just listening to him talk about how Buffalo has skating rinks, and the guy in the car is with him like, yeah, man, we got a lot of skating rinks. He's like, man, like, it's just the culture shock of him going from Florida State to Buffalo, his just wide-eyed joy taking it all in.
Talking about buying his jacket on sale.
Oh, my God, the whole thing. What a phenomenally interesting human being.
Yep.
We need the Keon Coleman show for sure. Like, sometimes I get cynical when these guys, like, all of a sudden everyone's talking about him. Not on this, man. I love it. I think it's awesome. And just, again, the wide-eyed sort of innocence just makes the whole thing really great. All right, are we going to answer some questions? We will. 866-9 979-3776. Any question on any subject, you can text it in. And I got a bunch on Twitter here as well. We will answer your questions, Jerk, next on Brock and Salk.